Hey, y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is the website. I should pronounce the H in my name. ScottHorton.org. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is anti-war radio. I'm your host, Scott Horton. Sheldon Richmond's going to be on the show today. That's good. And I'm still hoping to try to hear back from Mohammed Sahimi. Talk about the Iran talks with him if we can. I was supposed to interview this guy, Matthew Aiken, who wrote about the A-team killings in Afghanistan, but that keeps falling through due to time zone difficulties and so forth. Looks like that's going to be Monday. Have to record him before the show and then play him on the show. That's that. And then I never did hear back from Trevor Tim, did I? I was trying to reach Trevor Tim because there's been some late breaking developments. Well, not very late, but been some developments in the National Security Agency story that I was hoping he could cover for us. Oh, wow, here's Kerry announcing the Afghan deal right now.
To the final language of the bilateral security agreement that will be placed before the lawyer Jirga tomorrow.
Anyway, they're saying the language has been reached for the U.S. to stay in Afghanistan at least through 2024. That's what Obama meant when he said, yeah, we're going to end the war by 2014. What he was trying to say was, I believe you're a stupid idiot, and you'll believe whatever I tell you if I tell you to. And I'm agreed with John Glazer on this. I don't think they have any good reason to stay other than they can't admit that they lost. And if they leave, the Afghan so-called government will completely fall apart, and there will be a horrible civil war, and a lot more people will die. And then the Republicans will call the Democrats sissy pants, and then they will cry because they are sissy pants and they can't stand being called names by Republicans. So they'll do the brave thing, and that is lay down prone on their bellies and grovel before the political right. We'll kill whichever peasants you demand we kill. Just don't call us pansies. The Democrats will cry, with tears streaming down their face. And so Afghans will continue to be blown apart by American munitions. And, of course, by those who continue to resist the American occupation and kill plenty of innocent civilians in their side of the war as well. So good for you, America. Just can't admit you got whooped by a bunch of loser nobodies with World War I rifles, huh? Yeah, well, guess what? You don't have the right to win in the first place. You never had the right. And so it's just kind of a coincidence that you can't possibly win. You will not win. You have not won. You've been defeated. You know, like France in World War II. It's a pathetic disgrace. And I know that your tiny little American emotions will take years to recover. In fact, we might invade Grenada again just to make you feel like a real man after the final withdrawal in 2024, right? Assuming they don't sign another deal by then. I heard on National Public Radio yesterday, I'm Robert Siegel. I'm very good at this. And he was asking the correspondent type, so this status of forces agreement, is this a treaty? Oh, no, that's the good news, National Public Radio host. No, it's not a treaty, so it doesn't have to be ratified by the Senate. Now, Karzai can't just sign it. he's got to take it to be ratified by the Loya Jirga, see? But in America, we have what's called a fascist totalitarian dictatorship, where the president can sign treaties all by himself, by calling it something other than a treaty. And then the Senate does nothing. But, you know, lay down on their bellies like Democrats. And take it. Because they don't really want the responsibility. They like dictatorship. So, where Hamid Karzai has to get his status of forces agreements ratified. Same thing happened in Iraq, right? Maliki said, you know, I gotta take it before the parliament and have them ratified. You know what? I keep trying to convince them, but they just won't do it. On the American end, the deal was, well, if George Bush wants a status of forces agreement, he gets a status of forces agreement. Whoever heard of Congress anyway? Not them. So, where Maliki and Karzai, the executives of the American-supported sock puppet dictatorships of Iraq and Afghanistan, have to go to their parliaments for ratification to invite us to stay. Invite us to stay. Yeah, that's supposed to come in italics and ironic quotes, I think. The Americans, they just do what they want. The American presidents and their agents, they just do whatever they want. Like, determine, decide for 300 million of us that the U.S. military will continue to occupy Afghanistan forever. You know, I think maybe part of the problem is people don't know where Afghanistan is. Because if they knew where Afghanistan was, they might think, man, that's really far away to stay forever when you're from North America, you know? Far side of China from here, huh? Way over there on the other side of Iran, coming from the other way. Man, that's pretty far. Anyway. This will be John Kerry's legacy. He negotiated the deal to keep America and Afghanistan forever. We know how important legacy is to John Kerry. All right, well, does anybody even mind? Does that bother anyone? You know, I saw where Chuck Hagel, the Secretary of Defense, said that, hey, the American people are sick and tired of wars in the Middle East. They don't want any more wars in the Middle East. No more wars, no more invasions, no more occupations. Yeah? Well, how come that doesn't count for leaving the ones we already got? I mean, the war in Iraq was for the majority who kicked our ass out as soon as they were done seizing the capital city. But in Afghanistan, no one with power will be able to hold it without the Americans helping them. The whole thing will fall apart without the occupation to prop them up. But, so anyway, you know, we can expect the Taliban, I guess, probably won't try to take back the capital city until the foreigners are all finally gone. The foreigners certainly can bring firepower to bear. So the Taliban would be fools, I guess, to try to take back the capital city until the Americans are gone, but I don't know. I just wonder, you know, yeah, they say that the policy is to keep, I say too, I think it's probably right that, you know, part of the thing is preventing the peace pipeline, right? Preventing the Iranians and the Afghans, the Pakistanis, and the Indians from all sharing one big gas pipeline to India, maybe even all the way to China. You know, capitalism can help to destroy old statist grudges and enmities. Oh, don't go to war with them. We're all making money here. That kind of thing. So I think that's probably part of it, but mostly it's just that it'll look bad. You know, our credibility is at stake and all that. Yawn. When America says we're going to back a ridiculous sock puppet dictatorship that no one in a country wants at all, then we stick to that. Even if we have to stay for 23 years, we will prop up Gulbuddin Hekmatyar and General Rape'em and Skin'em Alive Dostum. I forget his first name. Rape'em and Skin'em Alive, I think, is his first name. First and middle names. And Hamid Karzai, the heroin junkie, who sometimes stops puking long enough to pretend to denounce American murders of civilians under his pretended jurisdiction. I liked how in Michael Hastings' piece on Stanley McChrystal, McChrystal's guys describe Karzai not even as the joke has long been, describe him as the mayor of Kabul, as opposed to the president of Afghanistan. But they say, he's not the mayor of Kabul. He's the mayor of his own palace, where he hides in the dark all day and shoots junk. Well, you know, it can be really depressing being the sock puppet dictatorship of Afghanistan, I guess. You might be a junkie, too. Anyway, I don't know. Isn't that crazy, though, to think that there are kids right now at their fourth birthday party who are going to die in Afghanistan fighting for the Democrats? Does that seem right to you? As revenge for 9/11, which was done by Saudis and Egyptians, who, yeah, they were hiding out in Afghanistan, but they're gone now. It wasn't the Taliban that did the attack. It wasn't even the Afghan government did the attack. It was just some Arabs who were hiding out in their country. So that means North Americans somehow have the right to just keep killing people somewhere nearby where Osama once was a dozen years back, back when he was alive. And we get to just keep killing him? I don't know. And what's funny is, if Obama just said, all right, forget it, and called it off and brought the troops home now, and the Republicans said, oh, treason and Al-Qaeda, all Obama would have to say is, hey, American people, do you agree with the Republicans that we ought to reinvade Afghanistan, or have you had enough? And see what they say. And I know that the American people aren't the ones with political power in this country, but sort of kind of they are in a way. If it comes down to a fight between the American people and the special interests, the American people can win if they're on the same side, and especially if it's dear leader actually doing the right thing once in a while and asking them for support. Hey, I'm trying to do a peace deal with Iran. Americans, call your Republicans and your Democrats and tell them to let me go ahead and get this done. Or, hey, Americans, the Republicans want me to reinvade Afghanistan now that I already got all the troops out. What do you want to do? But, you know, you'd have to have some mistaken assumption that any part of Obama wants to do the right thing in any case. I think the only times he ever wants to do the right thing at all has got to be for some corrupt, evil reason. Right? It makes me wonder. Talks with Iran? Jeez, maybe Newt Gingrich is right. Obama really is an Islamist, treasonous traitor. As Lou Rockwell put it, thank God. Wouldn't that be wonderful if Obama really was a Muslim? Maybe he would back off on all the mass murder a little bit. But I can't entertain the possibility that he never has a good reason for doing anything ever, and that if he ever does anything right at all, it's only for the wrong reason. Because the excuse that, but the Republicans would attack him for doing the right thing doesn't cut it. You know, look at Ron Paul. If Ron Paul was the president, he would have ordered the Navy to get the hell away from Iran back on his first day in power in 2009. And he would have told the Iranians, all right, here's the deal I'm offering. We're no longer threatening you with war, and all the sanctions are hereby lifted, and have a nice day. Signed, the president. And if Israel doesn't like it, why don't you go see if you can, lobby the Chinese into paying your way all day? See if they care about helping you steal and lie all day. That would have been easy. That would have been easy. And all the Republicans and all the Democrats saying, oh, boo-hoo, Iran. Ron Paul would have just said, tough. Oh, you don't like peace with Iran? Well, should have voted for McCain then. Should have voted for Obama. That's what he would have said. And any admiral who said, but I don't want to sail my ship away from Iran, he would have said, you're fired. Simple as that. And you know it's a fact, too. Simple as that. And you know how I know? Because they asked him, what would you do your first day in power? I'd tell the admirals to back away from Iran. I would call off the threats against Iran on the first day. So, there are no excuses for Barack Hussein Obama. All he's got to do is the right thing, and defending it is easy every time. Let Chuck Schumer and John McCain cry their eyes out. All he's got to say is the truth. Hey, American people, the Iranians never really were making nukes. So we just made it, and they were already verified to not be making nukes. And all of our intelligence agencies agreed they weren't making nukes. All I did was just sign a deal with them to where they're extra super definitely verified to not be making nukes. So I'm lifting the sanctions and I'm normalizing relations. Tell the Republicans to piss off. Hey, Americans, I'm getting out of Afghanistan. We don't need a surge there. Just because General Petraeus wants work doesn't mean we have to double down on a failed war. It's a Republican policy to try to conquer Afghanistan. I think it's stupid. Don't you agree with me? It's all he has to do. It's all he would have had to do. Civil war in Syria on the side of Al-Qaeda? No. In fact, definitely not. And in fact, Americans and everyone in the world, you should be aware it's the Saudis who are behind this push to try to get America to, oh, and the Israelis, to try to back Al-Qaeda in Syria against the Ba'athists there, but I don't think so. Ba'athists are no good, but they're better than Al-Qaeda's suicide bombers. Stop me when I get to an argument that Barack Obama could not have won on any of these foreign policies whatsoever. And, you know, they say they're trying again to cut a deal in Geneva right now, but it's all the lower down people meeting. He could have had this deal no problem last week. All he has to do is threaten the Israelis to Benjamin Netanyahu, shut your mouth or I'm cutting you off. Right? Like, go to school or I'm not paying your bills anymore, says dad to his spoiled rotten college kid. Right? The deal would have been signed. But Barack Obama's got to be the most pathetic man ever to be the president of the United States. We've had some horrible presidents, but none as weak and pathetic as this one. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to talk to you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In the book, Swanson explains what the revolution was, the rise of empire, and the permanent military economy, and all from a free market libertarian perspective. Jacob Hornberger, founder and president of the Future Freedom Foundation, says the book is absolutely awesome, and that Swanson's perspectives on the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis are among the best I've read. The poll numbers say that people agree on one thing, it's that America is on the wrong track. In The War State, Swanson gets to the bottom of what's ailing our society. Empire. The permanent national security bureaucracy that runs it, and the mountain of debt that has enabled our descent down this dark road. The War State could well be the book that finally brings this reality to the level of mainstream consensus. America can be saved from its government and its arms dealers. First, get the facts. Get The War State by Michael Swanson, available at your local bookseller and at Amazon.com. or just click on the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against a depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Man, I had a chance to have an essay published in the book Why Peace, edited by Mark Gutman, but I didn't understand what an opportunity it was. Boy, do I regret I didn't take it. This compendium of thoughts by the greatest anti-war writers and activists of our generation will be remembered and studied long into the future. You've got to get Why Peace. You've got to read Why Peace. It features articles by Harry Brown, Robert Naiman, Fred Bronfman, Dahlia Wasfey, Richard Cummings, Karen Katowski, Butler Schaefer, Kathy Kelly, Robert Higgs, Anthony Gregory, and so many more. Why peace? Because war is the health of everything wrong with our society. Get Why Peace. Down at the bookshop or Amazon.com. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. All right, now's the part of the show where I begin going on and on about how much I hate Israel. God, I hate Israel so much. I hate the Israeli government. I hate the Israeli people who voted for any right-wingers that ended up joining the coalition, the Netanyahu coalition. Screw all of you. Good luck getting any other country in the world to pay your way to veto every righteous condemnation of your crimes against humanity in the UN Security Council over and over and over again. God, at this point, you know what I want to see? I want to see the Iranians make a nuclear bomb and nuke Benjamin Netanyahu with it. I want them to shoot it all the way down his big, fat, lying mouth, which it would fit. You could fit an H-bomb. Not even the miniaturized kind like the CIA gave the Iranians the blueprints for. I mean, a big H-bomb like Tsar Bomba. And I would like to see Benjamin Netanyahu exploded. And then that way, he won't talk anymore. And isn't actually that the worst thing about Benjamin Netanyahu? No, I guess not. If it was your little kid that he killed, then, you know, you might not feel that way. But for me, I just can't stand listening to Benjamin Netanyahu talk anymore. I wish someone would smash his fat, ugly, lying face with a baseball bat. And then he would have to shut up for just a little while. See, here's my thing about Israel. The only reason there's an Israel at all is because of the United States of America. And the only reason that the Israelis get away with killing and stealing every single day is because the Americans pay their way. And the only reason that 4,500 Americans and something on the order of 1 million Iraqis died in the Iraq War is because of Israel lying us into war. In fact, the only reason that the two towers got knocked down full of 3,000 people so that Benjamin Netanyahu could come on TV and try to confuse you about who are your enemies and who are his enemies is because of Israel in the first place. Because Mohammed Atta and Osama bin Laden decided they had something in common. They both thought that Americans should die as revenge for supporting the Israelis. And not the Israelis for being nice Jews, but the Israelis for being murderers. Mass murderers of little bitty helpless children. War criminals. All day, every day, the Israeli government kills people and steals things. And they do it because America says it's fine. Because the Americans say it's fine. And so, that's how we got into our war with Al-Qaeda in the first place. And then once, Bill Clinton let them attack us at the First World Trade Center attack and the Khobar Towers, which he blamed on Iran because that's what Israel wanted, and the African embassies, which he shot a couple of cruise missiles at a antibiotics factory in Sudan as revenge for that. And then the USS Cole, he did absolutely nothing whatsoever. they were trying to start a war with us. Bill Clinton shot down the CIA, gave him 10 different chances, some say 13 different chances, to kill bin Laden before 9/11, which he declined each and every time. But then, once 9/11 happened, what happened? America went to war against all of Israel's enemies. Because isn't that funny how all of Israel's enemies and all of Osama bin Laden's enemies are the very same people? You know, like the infidel socialist Saddam Hussein, as Osama bin Laden called him. You know, the heretic Shiite mullahs who rule Iran. The Shiite Alawite Baathists who rule Syria. Nasrallah and Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And why does America do all of this? Because it's what Israel wanted. When 9/11 happened and the Iranians came crawling on their knees and said, please accept our help. We want to help you fight the Taliban. We want to help you fight Al-Qaeda. A bunch of Al-Qaeda guys tried to run across our border. We nabbed them. We'll give them to you. Let's work together. The Americans took them up on it for about 4 months. 3 months. And then in January of 2002, George Bush announced that Iran was part of the axis of evil with their avowed sworn enemy, Saddam Hussein, in Iraq. Why? Because that's what the Israelis on his staff put in his speech. And I mean, it wasn't David Frum, it was Richard Perle who put that in his speech. And Richard Perle is an agent, was acting as an agent of Ariel Sharon, the prime minister of Israel. And in fact, they wanted to make the Axis of Evil speech say, the Axis of Evil, Iran, Iraq, and Syria. But then it would be too obvious that there had been some kind of foreign government coup d'etat inside our government. So they said, they added North Korea. Well, we'll have the Americans do Syria. We just, you know, won't put that in the Axis of Evil speech. We don't want it too obvious that Ariel Sharon is the one moving George W. Bush's lips right now. Not like Bush had the slightest idea who these men were. David Wurmser and Douglas Feith, Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, Abram Shulsky and Scooter Libby, acting as agents of a foreign power. Lying us into war with Iraq. Just a few weeks back, 6-8 weeks ago, when there was a giant push to try to start a war with Syria, who was behind that? No one in America, other than the Israelis. Other than those American traitors who put Israel first and want to see a regime change in Syria because they put Israel first. And they don't care what are the costs for the Americans. They don't care how many Marines or Army men die in some giant war in Syria that airstrikes would obviously turn into, a regime change there would obviously turn into. They don't care about that. In fact, they don't even care about the long-term interests of Israel, or if they do, they're dumber than dirt if they think that turning Syria into a boiling cauldron is how to best protect Israeli security. And now that the Democrats are even inching toward a nuclear deal with Iran, the Israelis aren't even hiding it. They're doing everything they can to try to come between America and peace. And they're going to find they're going to lose a lot of Americans. It's going to be not so absurd. In fact, this guy doesn't ever pay me, so I'm not going to play his ad. It's going to be a lot more absurd than Benjamin Netanyahu thinks. Or, yeah, a lot less is what I was going to try to say. Benjamin Netanyahu, of course, is famous for saying it's ridiculous that the American people support Israel when Israel doesn't care about America. The Israelis would just as soon see all of America burn. They don't care about us. American support for us, it's absurd, he said. I think that's going to change. And I think Israel is going to end up, first of all, it'll be a minority-run apartheid fascist dictatorship, which it already is de facto, but it will be de jure pretty soon. And then they won't have America to support them, and then they'll cease to exist. And there will be a Palestinian state, after all, where Israel used to be, because peace and security just wasn't good enough. They had to have a boiling cauldron. They had to have regime change. They had to have the Odin-Yanan plan. the clean break, the end of Israel. And they're getting what they want. We'll see how it goes. All right, now wait a minute. Did anybody pay me whose commercial I just skipped? Nope. All right, good. I never did hear back from Mohammed Sahimi. Well, good. I get to talk more about how much I hate Benjamin Netanyahu. So, yeah, there's this footage of Benjamin Netanyahu, if you haven't seen it. He's now the Prime Minister of Israel, but he also was once upon a time as well. And there's footage that was recorded when the camera was right there on the tripod, but maybe he just assumed that it wasn't on. I don't know. But it's Benjamin Netanyahu visiting the home of some settlers in the occupied West Bank. You know, stolen land. And they're saying to him, well, they're asking him about his dealings with the Democrats in the Clinton years and how Bill Clinton was trying to work on this Palestinian state, or, you know, moving toward it, sort of, kind of. And Netanyahu ran circles around him. And here he is explaining to this family of settlers on the occupied West Bank how he made a damned fool out of the American president. Screwed him right in the mouth, like he was Monica Lewinsky. Right in front of the whole world, too, which is hilarious. Because Bill Clinton, up until that point, was the most powerful man who had ever lived. And yet, Netanyahu screwed him right in the face. Oh, yeah, see, what he wanted me to do was end the occupation. And what I told him was, yeah, sure, you know what I'll do is I'll end the martial law here and there, but I won't end it in the security zone. See, we got to have these security zones on the West Bank, you know, for security. You don't want them to push us into the sea, he cried. And so Bill Clinton said, okay, you can have your area C. And then as Netanyahu jokes, and then so what I did was I just defined Area C as the entire West Bank. And then one of the settlers said, hey, man, with you jerking the Americans around that bad all the time, you worried that maybe there will be consequences and we'll end up losing American support? And Netanyahu said, oh, are you kidding? 80% of the Americans support us. It's absurd. America is a thing which is easily moved. Don't you like hearing that from Benjamin Netanyahu? Your brain is a tiny, pathetic little thing, and he can just stick his dick right in your brain and make you think whatever he wants you to think. Oh, poor Israel. I heard that the Palestinians started the last war, and it's all their fault. Oh, poor little Israel. They're our best friend in the Middle East. I can't think of a single thing they ever did for us, ever. But I heard it said that they're our best friend in the Middle East over and over again, so I like repeating that. They're the only democracy in the Middle East because every time they tell the Americans to cancel any democratic elections held in the region, like in Algeria or in Gaza or in Egypt or in Lebanon, we go in there and we try to cancel the results of the elections. So they're the only democracy in the Middle East. Yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu stuck his phallus right in my eyeball, and all I can think of to say is things that he told me to say. This thing with Iran is a bad deal. It'll leave the Iranians with the ability to make a nuclear bomb. Because Netanyahu told me to say that. I'm an American. I'm easily moved. It's absurd, actually, the things that I think. But I think them because that's what Benjamin Netanyahu says. Yeah, I know he's been claiming that the Iranians have been making a bomb for more than 20 years. And I know that even one moment's reflection would lead one to conclude that that must be wrong, or they would have had some by now. But you know what? I believe him this time, too. I heard the other day that he said that the Iranians could have nuke bombs in 3 weeks. With magic, you know. If the Ayatollah Khamenei was, I don't know, Gandalf the Grey. Or Saruman the Wise. Then, yeah, I guess they could have nuclear bombs. Or, you know what? If Vladimir Putin flew a plane full of H-bombs to Iran and dropped it off and said, would you like some H-bombs? Then, yeah, I guess in that case, it could have some H-bombs and some nukes in 3 weeks. But, you know, I'm an American. I just don't ever get sick of being lied to by the government of Israel. Tell me again why my government should not make peace with another government in the world. Yeah, tell me some more lies. I don't care if they're even plausible or not. Oh, Iran could have nukes in 3 weeks, you say, huh? Boy. I'm like a Republican congressman now. I'll take the word of an Israeli politician contradicting the Israeli intelligence agencies over the word of the American intelligence agencies any day, especially if the American intelligence agencies are saying a reason why not to bomb somebody, why not to worry that they might nuke you. I mean, if you're a Republican congressman and all American intelligence agencies agree with the Israeli intelligence agencies that there actually is no nuclear weapons program in Iran, but then an Israeli politician tells you to say otherwise, what do? You say otherwise. Because that's what it means to be a Republican congressman. You have to do the bidding of foreign powers against the interests of your own country and your own government. Isn't that great? That's called conservatism. What you do is you put the interests of lying leaders of foreign states before the interests of your own state. And what's hilarious is, too, I read these quotes from, was it Bob Corker, came out of one of these briefings, and every sentence that he began stopped before he could finish it. Well, you know, the thing is, well, you know, there's a problem in that. Well, you know, they're kind of vague about... He can't say anything. Because to finish a sentence, he'd have to try to make some sense. And he can't. He's got no sense to make. In fact, I think I have may have one of the quotes I'm talking about right here. Bob Dreyfus has even got the Washington Institute for Near East Policy is warning the Israel lobby that, man, you better back off. This could be real bad news here. You making the entire American population hate your guts for trying to lie them out of peace all the time. Try to lie them into war in Syria. There's no one for the war in Syria but the Israelis. And there's no one opposing peace with Iran other than the Israelis and liars like Cliff May, who's on CNN right now lying because he puts the interests of a foreign country first, because he's a traitor. Right, so there are foreign liars, and then there are American traitors who side with the foreign liars. And damn, maybe it was the CNN article that had the Republican quotes. Oh, see, CNN, they're so nice. They went and fixed up his dot, dot, dots and replaced them with commas. As though this amounts to a complete sentence rather than him just going, oh, well, I guess I can't end that sentence completely without revealing what a liar I am. We know who we are dealing with, and we watch the same type of activity occur in North Korea where you begin to alleviate sanctions. Here they replace his dot, dot, dots with a comma. And I think that the concern is whatever you do in the interim basis becomes the new norm. Well, what in the hell kind of complete sentence is that, CNN editor liars, covering up for this traitor Republican? The hell's the matter with you people? That's not a complete sentence. The first half of that sentence has nothing to do with the second half whatsoever. Or are you telling me that he argued that they alleviated a bunch of sanctions on the North Koreans and then just left it that way? Or was he going to argue that it was alleviating sanctions on the North Koreans? See, this is the thing. This is why they changed it from the comma. It started out a dot, 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 and that was the real quote. Well, we saw this happen in North Korea where we began to alleviate sanctions, dot, 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 and then he was unable to finish that sentence by saying, and that led to them getting a nuclear bomb. Because that's not the truth. What happened was, we had a deal, we lifted some sanctions, and then the Americans blew the deal. The Americans added sanctions. The Americans threatened, created what they called the Proliferation Security, Proliferation Security Initiative, PSI, right? That said, we're going to seize your ships on the high seas, and accuse them of breaking the deal, which they didn't do, accuse them of having a secret uranium enrichment program, which they didn't have, and accuse them of breaking the deal and announce no intention of fulfilling our end of the deal, which was oil, money, and a light water reactor. And then, only after all the increased sanctions on North Korea, only then did they finally withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty and their safeguards agreement and begin to try to make nukes, and now they have some. That was why Bob Corker couldn't finish his sentence, because it was such a blatant and obvious lie that he was waging against your brain on behalf of a foreign power. Because he's an agent of a foreign power. And then he had to end his sentence with this nonsense. I think the concern is whatever you do on the interim basis becomes the new norm. Well, what do you mean? If the deal is lift some sanctions and they scale back their nuclear program, then that's what the deal is for. Supposedly, that's what the sanctions were for in the first place. Not just because Republicans acting as agents of foreign powers like starving little Iranian children to death for fun because they're satanic killers, but so that we would have something to lift in exchange for them scaling back their nuclear deal, right? Their nuclear program. Or what is the purpose of the sanctions if it's not to have something to lift? It sure as hell hasn't prevented them from expanding their nuclear program all this time. They made a political decision earlier this year to halt any expansion on a unilateral basis, not as part of any deal. But they've got more facilities and more centrifuges than ever before. So the sanctions haven't been, if their stated purpose is preventing the nuclear program from going forward, their failure at that. So what is he talking about? Whatever you do on the interim basis becomes a new norm. If you lift some sanctions on the interim basis while you're working on a final deal, the entire premise is that the final deal would include lifting the sanctions in exchange for them doing what we want them to do with their nuclear program. So what he's really saying is, I, Bob Corker, am a traitor to America. And against the American people, because that's what Israel wants. Because there's a liar, a murderer, and a liar, and a thief, the scum of the earth, named Benjamin Netanyahu. And he's right about me, Bob Corker. I'm easily moved. I'm absurd. And I'm an agent of a foreign power. And so my job is attempting to obstruct peace between America and Iran. That's what he's saying. When asked for a coherent argument, all he could say was, something, something, North Korea, interim norm, huh? What? You mean that time sanctions drove North Korea to nuclear weapons? Is that what you're talking about? Oh, you're just saying you're a traitor and you can't think of a good excuse. You have to go, why don't you call your Israeli handlers and ask them to write up some talking points for you? I thought I hated the Democrats, but Republicans continue to remind me how much I hate them more. You know, George Bush never even tried any kind of deal with Iran at all. He just wanted to bomb them. And fortunately, there was a CIA plot to prevent him from bombing Iran. A CIA plot to lie America out of war, to truth us out of war. And you heard Ray McGovern on the show the other day quoting out of George Bush's memoirs. Well, the damn CIA came and told all of the American people that I was lying and that there was no nuclear weapons program in Iran, and so I couldn't bomb them after that. Damn it. And that's the secret, by the way, Republicans, for why you all continue to lose in all the elections. Everybody hates Obama. Everybody who loved Obama, they all quit loving him back, what, 3-4 years ago. They could tell by 2010 that he is just another George W. Bush. That he's just Hillary Clinton in drag. Anybody who had been mistaken about that quit being mistaken about that all along. But what they couldn't be made to do is hate him more than they hate you. Because there's no one more contemptible on the planet than the Republicans. There's no one who holds more contempt for simple facts than Republicans. For common decency and honesty than Republicans. They are, in fact, the worst people on the face of the earth, even out of power. They're worse than the communists that run China. I mean, they're not really communists, but they have a dictatorship. No, the American Republicans are way more violent and dishonest than them. By orders of magnitude, it's almost immeasurable. There are no worse enemies of truth and peace and decency than the Republican Party of the United States of America in 2013. And that includes Rand Paul, who's good on what? One thing? Who's bad on Israel, because that's what Israel wants. And who's bad on Iran, because that's what Israel wants. And who's bad on Afghanistan, because I have no idea why he's bad on Afghanistan. But he is. Who's bad on Guantanamo, because no idea. No idea. Because he's a coward? Because his soul is too teeny tiny to try to argue with other Republicans about holding people without trial forever in communist Cuba? And who's even willing to throw his father under the bus on the cause of the 9/11 attacks? Oh no, American foreign policy, which includes unlimited support for Israel all this time, has nothing to do with why they attacked us. Or, you know, lots of things. And yeah, and they would have attacked us anyway, I bet. And yeah, uh-huh. That's funny. America never had Arab enemies until America created Israel. America never had Arab enemies until America told the Israelis, you can kill whoever you want, steal whoever you want, do whatever you want. We'll pay for it all. You can fly our F-16s and shoot our M-16s while you do it, too. You can wear big signs that say, we kill because America says it's okay to. And wear big signs that say, oh, you hate us for killing you and stealing your stuff? Attack America. They're the ones who pay for it all. Right, like it was Looney Tunes and there's a big sign over Israel. America, responsible for all our sins. Take it up with them. But that has nothing to do, nothing whatsoever to do with why America has a terrorism problem. Or if it does, you know, just a little bit. Because Rand Paul asked, I'll have a little bit better chance at the nomination for president if I throw my father under the bus on the why they attacked us issue, right? Will that put me ahead by 0.1%? Oh, good. I bet Bill Kristol will like me if I stop telling the truth about how the war on terrorism started. And that's what's hilarious, too. And points. I should join up the chat room. I don't know, free bumper sticker or something. to whoever can find me the YouTube of Rand Paul giving a speech in 2007 talking all about Robert Pape and Michael Scheuer and how the war on terrorism started. Because I've seen the speech. He's outside in Kentucky. I don't know if it was during the primaries or during the general. Or no, it's not. I'm sorry, it's not from 2010 when he ran for Senate. It's from 07 when his father was running for president. There's Rand Paul giving a speech, laying out the Michael Scheuer, Robert Pape thesis on how we got into this mess. Our politicians got us into this mess for backing Israel mostly and occupying the Arabian Peninsula because that's what Israel wanted, dual containment of Iraq and Iran in the 1990s. And so he can try to flip and flop and pretend he never said that, but the YouTube exists. It's out there somewhere. And Bill Kristol and them, they'll find it. Anyway, the Republicans, man, they're horrible. Bob Corker. I don't even know who that is other than a guy who represents a foreign government in the U.S. Senate. How the hell does that work? America is so corrupt, it's sickening, man. It's just sickening. But, you know, I wonder when Benjamin Netanyahu says that 80% of Americans support Israel. I mean, obviously the film is from 2000 and 2001, something like that. But I wonder what the poll numbers say now. And I wonder what the poll numbers will say when the American people know that. Did you know that, you know, if you set up the poll question this way, did you know that Osama bin Laden 700 times before 9/11 cited American support for Israel as one of the main reasons he was attacking us? Do you still support Israel? Do you like that? Or now that you're aware that the neoconservative movement, which is just a group of traitors who care only about Israel and don't care how many Americans die in wars for Israel, that they lied us into war with Iraq because that's what Ariel Sharon, the prime minister of Israel, wanted them to do. Do you support Israel now? That Iraq war, that worst strategic disaster in American history, that policy that was born in Tel Aviv, do you support them now? Hey, now that you've seen this video of Benjamin Netanyahu mocking the stupidity of the American people and the American president for letting him get away with stealing the entire West Bank while calling it a security zone, do you support him now? After you watch this video of Benjamin Netanyahu calling you absurd for believing in him, do you still believe in him? I wonder what would the polls be. Somebody get Frank Luntz on the line. Hey, Frank. Frank Luntz, he's the guy that said, hey, warning to all pro-Israel groups. Whenever you try to defend Israel, there's a talking point that's been going around that we got to stop using. And the talking point is that all the Arabs in East Jerusalem, that their homes are not up to the zoning codes. And so therefore, we have to knock all their buildings down and steal all their property. Ooh, Americans hate zoning codes. So I know you thought that that was a really great PR stunt to use, a great excuse. Well, of course we're stealing all of East Jerusalem from the families who've lived there for thousands of years. But their homes that were built in the 19-teens when Israel was the fantasy of some coffee-drinking intellectuals in Austria. Those homes, why, they're not up to code that we just made up. And so now we have to zone them out of business. Oops! We shouldn't be saying that, everyone. Stop saying that as an excuse for grand theft half a city. I mean, don't stop stealing all of East Jerusalem. Just stop telling Americans that zoning laws are what makes it okay. Because you will turn an American into an Israel hater in a minute with a line like that. Oh, so Israel, you guys are the big land zoners by the sea, huh? You guys are the reason I can't build a shed in my backyard, is that right? Say the Americans. You go around lording your zoning codes over the Palestinians, huh? Well, maybe I do support the next intifada then, if that's who you are. Gotta love Frank Luntz and the pro-Israel, you know, that's my thing. That's my flaw, right? What I need to do is I need to work hard ripping people off like Israelis. I'll just steal all day like Israelis instead of producing anything that anyone wants. And then I'll sell what I steal and I'll have a whole bunch of money. And then I'll spend that money on a counterpart to Frank Luntz, only someone who's not a corrupt, evil liar, but who specializes in debunking the lies of corrupt, evil liars. And then we'll have, I don't know, what's the opposite of Hasbara in Hebrew? You know, what is it called to tell someone the truth? It'll be that. Hasbara means Israeli public relations. Lies. All lies. Because there's nothing true about Israel that they could tell you to get you to side with them. So it's all lies. But so I was thinking, you know, what we'll do is we'll put millions and millions of dollars into explaining to the American people that the Israelis, you know what they do? They write up zoning codes. And they use those as the excuse to steal other people's land. Can you believe that? That's who they are. They're a bunch of zoning code writers. Just like the favorite, your favorite people in your county, right? We'll just tell them the truth about how, oh yeah, man, all the Christians of the West Bank are living in America or in Canada because they were all kicked out of their homeland by the Israelis. This is always a puzzling one for conservatives. Does an Arab count as a human being if he's a Christian? Right? So you start with that, and most conservatives will start nodding their head. Wait a minute. Can an Arab have a right that I could be bound to respect if their soul is saved by Jesus? I think maybe. I think maybe they could possibly be human if they're Christians. But then what if they're Christians who were ethnically cleansed by Israeli Jews? Then they're not human again, right? Oh, the enemies who oppressed them and repressed them and stole from them aren't Muslims, but Israeli Jews? Oh, well, then that's different. Nope, they're not human anymore. Right, conservatives? You almost got me, though. I almost had to admit that an Arab could be a human. But no, not if they're a victim of a Jew. In which case, no. In fact, I think I heard that baby Jesus created Muslims just so Jews could kill them and steal their stuff. Isn't that in the Bible? And no Muslim, Arab or otherwise, has any right that any Jew or white man or Westerner of any kind is bound to respect. Isn't that right? Hiring pollsters, man. That's what we need to get to work on. We can, really, we can just plagiarize Frank Luntz, right? Let's take his poll results and turn them inside out. Hey, Americans, you know what Israel is? They're a bunch of zoning law writers. Don't you love that? Hey, Al Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf now. Makes me smile every time it catches my eye. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up, turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? the Bill of Rights.
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. First up, our guest today is Sheldon Richman. He's vice president of the Future Freedom Foundation and editor of their journal, The Future of Freedom. He keeps his own blog at SheldonRichman.com. Free Association is the name of the blog. Welcome back to the show, Sheldon. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I'm always happy to be here.
Well, good times. I'm glad to have you back. So listen, you've got a very important piece on Afghanistan today, which we've got to talk about. It's the U.S. isn't leaving Afghanistan. But first, I wanted to ask you just a little bit about the Iran talks, and more specifically, about Israel's policy of openly and blatantly trying to interfere and prevent an American peace deal, and even going so far as to send Naftali Bennett to encourage American Jews to oppose this peace deal on behalf of a foreign power that they, most of them, have absolutely no connection to whatsoever. Have you ever seen such a sight in your life?
Well, I really can't recall seeing such a scene. It's pretty flagrant, as you say. And Netanyahu himself, the prime minister, has called on all the Jews of the world to oppose this negotiation and this deal, which, although it has not, you know, even the tentative language hadn't been released, somehow, I guess, Netanyahu knew what was in it and was condemning it.
Is he a secret agent of neo-Nazis and he's trying to make Jews look bad or what? Right, like every Nazi in America today is celebrating that. See, just like we told you, fifth column.
Well, you know, as I said on Facebook, nobody can parody Netanyahu as well as Netanyahu.
Yeah, I got that right.
It's impossible to do it.
And is it working, do you think, or not?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's putting pressure on members of Congress. Obama, while I have no confidence in Obama, I don't trust him at all. He at least is telling members of Congress to shut up about new sanctions. I think he's just trying to, you know, burn the candle at both ends. But whether it's working, I'm sure the Israelis who are doing this are emboldening Graham and McCain and Menendez and the others that do not want to see any kind of agreement and who want to press even greater sanctions on Iran as a way to bring about a regime change and an end to the Islamic Republic. That's what they want.
Yeah. Now, here's my thing. Is treason is defined in the Constitution as an overt act on behalf of a foreign enemy. And as much as I dislike Israel, it's not an enemy state of America. So I don't know if that means that Bob Corker and the rest of these guys are guilty of treason, but what do you call it? Because it's certainly criminal for them to be representing the interests of a foreign power against their own country like this, and at a time like this especially, isn't it?
Well, I'm not much interested in charges of treason because that can cut many different ways. I think it's
well. These guys have all sworn an oath, so the Lysander Spooner principle of "I don't owe you any allegiance" doesn't apply to them.
I think it's just enough for us to spell out what it is they're doing. It's in the American people's interest to have peace and a rapprochement with Iran. There's no reason why the American people and the Iranian people shouldn't be friends and trade and all the rest. And here is a group of Americans who are being aided by another, you know, people from a different country, officials from the government of another country, namely Israel, pushing to make sure there is no rapprochement with Iran. Let's just spell all that out and let people see it for what it is.
There you go. And you know what? I'm not a criminal prosecutor or anything, so I think I can still call it treason, even if it's not exactly, you know, the legal definition of treason. It's certainly the old world definition of treason.
Well, they're acting contrary to the interests of the American people. And I suppose, the theory is that as congressmen, members of Congress, they are acting on behalf of the American people. But here they are acting, in an adversarial way toward the American people. So I don't mind putting it that way.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Let's talk about Afghanistan. Nobody wants to talk about Afghanistan at all anymore, really, but it's the most violent of all of America's foreign policies to this day. And there's breaking news along these lines, Sheldon. I don't think I want to hear it, but go ahead.
It's also the longest war, and it's going to be a lot longer than people have been led to believe, because the people in the Obama administration have been suggesting it's going to end. The U.S. Presence will end at the end of next year, right? At the December 2014, the troops were supposed to come out. But now it's come out, and it's not a secret, because Kerry's now announcing that they have an agreement with the Karzai government in Afghanistan, that the U.S. Will remain. And I like the way the draft agreement put it. NBC got a hold of the draft agreement, put it up on its website, but you can also find that in my current article at FFF.org today, called "The U.S. Isn't Leaving Afghanistan." This draft agreement says that the U.S. troops will be there through 2024 and beyond. I mean, it sounds a little like Buzz Lightyear, right?
Yeah,
to infinity and beyond. It reminds me of Toy Story. So why do you bother to say 2024 if it's and beyond? Just say we're there indefinitely.
Right.
Now, this agreement can be terminated by either side, but it requires 2 years' notice. So at the soonest, it's 2026, right? Because 2024 with 2 years' notice, 2026. But that's assuming one party or the other wants to terminate it. So the U.S. will be there. We don't know how many troops. The Afghan officials gave NBC one estimate, 10 to 15,000. U.S., the government source, gave NBC a different estimate. I think, 6 to 8,000? Who knows?
But it doesn't say in the paperwork, though. That's up in the air.
It does not say, at least in the draft that's posted by NBC. It doesn't say. And so, but the U.S. will continue to be there, training, supporting, arming, and paying for the Afghan military, and being a and the United States will continue to be a guarantor of its sovereignty. And if any war crimes are committed by U.S. personnel, civilian or military, they will not be held liable under Afghan law or turned over to international tribunals, but will instead be turned over to American officials. And the big thing is, as far as we know, certainly this was in a later draft that the New York Times wrote about, that Rod Nordland wrote about yesterday, that the U.S. will continue to do raids on Afghan homes. This was something Karzai didn't want, because the Afghan people despise it. They despise America for conducting these raids, especially nighttime raids, breaking into people's homes. Karzai, in order to not alienate the people, has condemned those raids over the years and said they should not be done by the U.S. forces. But nevertheless, it looks like the U.S. is going to be able to continue to do it anyway under this extended agreement.
Man, well, okay, a few things here. First of all, this strategic partnership agreement, is that the same thing as the status of forces agreement? They just changed the term or what?
I suppose it is. Yeah, I think the status of forces agreement sounded like it was about the same thing, right? Under what circumstances or terms can the U.S. maintain military troops there? Yes.
But in other words, this is a treaty, only they just made up a new name for it so they don't have to deliver it before the U.S. Senate to ratify.
I believe that's right. I don't believe they have to put this. In fact, I saw another piece on NBC just today saying that a group of senators are trying to get Obama to have to come to Congress for permission to keep troops there. This is a group of senators that include Wyden, Manchin, Rand Paul, and maybe others that are they're drafting a. They are engaged now in an effort to compel, I suppose, or require Obama to come to Congress or the Senate for permission to keep the troops there. So that's a good sign, and who knows if it'll get anywhere. It's being led apparently by Senator Merkley of Oregon.
That is interesting. I guess I'm especially surprised to hear Rand Paul in there, because he's on the record for staying beyond 2024 or beyond 2014 for counterterrorism and training, as he called it, and the exact words of Obama.
Well, this is an amendment that's going to be attached to the annual defense spending bill. This will be interesting, because we'll see what happens. We'll see whether Obama can get them to remove it, or whether they're going to stick by it and push it.
All right, so did you see this thing in Rolling Stone about the A-Team killings?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to take a look at that. But you've heard of this, where the translator is accused of carrying out most of the killings and tortures, but the Special Forces guys were there all along and knew all about it, kind of thing. The story broke early this year, I think. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they got a really good write-up for it. But one of the, in the Rolling Stone right now, one of the things in there is he talks about how as they withdraw the regular army, that leaves Special Forces behind. So whatever numbers of thousands, fives or tens or whatever, which is, I think, what you're getting at when you talk about the permission in here to continue on with the night raids, that's the strategy of the Special Forces guys, is one at a time going to houses in the middle of the night like the Soviets.
Right.
And committing the acts that you referred to there turned the entire population against us. But so, you know what I'm wondering, though, is what about force protection? Because it sounds like these guys are going to end up with a Dien Bien Phu kind of thing, or Fall of Saigon kind of thing, where they're just completely surrounded and they don't have enough of themselves to protect themselves, you know?
It doesn't sound good. That's right. And so, maybe all these estimates we've heard are underestimates. By the way, NATO apparently, according to the reporting, NATO will also have some presence there. So that will be in addition to the however many thousands the U.S. U.S. put there. I think one thing that's really funny that your listeners probably will get a kick out of it, when Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, was asked about this, he said, quote, "I think when it comes to this president keeping his word and ending the war in Iraq, winding down and ending the war in Afghanistan, the public knows he's keeping his commitment."
Yeah, winding down, you know.
I mean, look, you know, I know it's the job of a White House press secretary to be a liar. I mean, that's what his job is. He gets paid. He's a professional liar. I know Jay Carney came from the world of journalism, where maybe we shouldn't expect more from a former reporter, but being a former reporter myself, I guess I do. It just seems pathetic that a guy can stand up in front of people, former colleagues of his, and make such a ridiculous statement. We were told we were getting out at the end of 2014. Now we're not going to get out until the end of 2026 if the agreement is terminated by one of the parties. So, in other words, we could be there forever. And here's Carney saying, the president has kept his word.
Right. No, that's one of the benefits of tripling the number of troops in the country. You can reduce it right back down to where you started and pretend like, you know, it's a big accomplishment that you're drawing down the forces that you tripled.
That's right.
People don't even remember that. I actually was arguing with somebody, a friend of mine, about Obama. I said, well, you know, at least he hasn't done any real big land invasions. Yeah, except for Afghanistan. Right. Yeah, we all just overlook that. And let's just pretend that there was no surge, that was just the drone war or some little old thing there.
Well, look, and his fans, and I count Rachel Maddow in that group, continued to say that he got us out of Iraq, although he tried his darndest to keep us in Iraq. It's only that Maliki wouldn't take the deal and didn't want to do what Karzai's willing to do, namely, let the U.S. personnel, when they commit war crimes, remain under the jurisdiction of the U.S. government. Of course, Maliki wouldn't do that, and so Obama wouldn't keep troops there under other terms.
You know, what's funny about that, too, is they even talk about that in the regular newspapers now. I mean, not just the facts, but even calling out the president's spin on it. That, like, well, really, Bush signed that deal, and Maliki forced America to stick to it. Basically, the Americans couldn't say anything about it.
So here, when he does get his way, Obama, namely, we see that he's not going to take out the troops. We are for the foreseeable future, we are, meaning, you know, the U.S. government, is the guarantor of the sovereignty and safety and security of Afghanistan. So what? So the American taxpayer is on the hook. The $17 trillion debt, be damned. That's the way things are. That's how this president is, you know, is treating the American people. Mm-hmm. So people will continue to die. Americans will continue to kill and die. And Americans, you know, America will continue to be hated because we're, you know, we're an imperialist aggressor. So instead of being able to live normally with the rest of the world, we're going to be in this same mode. And Mr. Obama, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, that's just fine with him.
Well, you know, unlike Obama, Karzai has to get this thing ratified by somebody, and they've got this lawyer Jirga there that's supposed to vote on it. He says he'll go with their decision. Makes me wonder, well, a couple things.
Right.
First of all, the Taliban suicide bombed the site of the lawyer Jirga just the other day, making a statement about we can reach you if we feel like it kind of thing. But then also, it makes me wonder whether Karzai is actually pulling the same stunt that Maliki pulled, which was to tell Obama, oh, yeah, yeah, no, I know, I want you to stay too. As many bases as you want. Yeah, whatever, whatever. Hey, wait right here and let me go talk to the guys and see if I can convince them, you know? And then he played he played Bush like that throughout 08 to get the sofa that he wanted. And then I think he played Obama that same way for the first 3 years or first 2 years of the Obama administration. And certainly throughout 2011, up until the end, where, as you just said, he told him at the end, no deal, beat it. But I wonder whether maybe that's the same game that Karzai is playing here. He's gone pretty far down the road, but maybe the lawyer Jirga is meant to fail. And I'm just desperate for one last route out of Afghanistan at this point. Sheldon, forgive me.
No, I share your frustration. What will it take to have even Obama's fans see him for what he is? It's just they are revealing themselves to be this, you know, these slavish, you know, worshipers who will accept anything from this guy.
Yeah, well, the ones who are left respecting him anyway. All right, hold it right there. We got to take this short break for no good reason. And then we'll be back with Sheldon Richman. More on America's unending occupation of Afghanistan after this.
Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council of the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Fact. The new NSA data center in Utah requires 1.7 million gallons of water every single day to operate. Billions of Fourth Amendment violations need massive computers and the water to cool them. That water is being supplied by the state of Utah. Fact. There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution which requires your state to help the feds violate your rights. Our message to Utah? Turn it off. No water equals no NSA data center. Visit offnow.org.
Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the thing here. I'm Scott. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. I got Sheldon Richmond on the line. He is the vice president of the Future of Freedom Foundation and the editor of their journal, The Future of Freedom. And we're talking about the negotiations over the Stay in Afghanistan Forever deal. And, well, desperately searching for reasons to think it might fall apart, but I think sadly resigned to the fact that it won't. Let me ask you what I asked John Glazer the other day, Sheldon. It's funny how little this comes up on the show. What the hell does the American government care about occupying Afghanistan anyway?
I heard your interview with John, and John is usually right. I don't know for sure. I think it's a lot of things, as he suggested. A lot of people want to jump to the economic or financial interests that some people have in the natural resources of Afghanistan. I know there's talk about pipelines, but I'm not going to rule that out. That sort of thing is always at work in foreign policy. I'm also thinking now in your interview with Andrew Coburn about how foreign policy is really just somebody's domestic policy. But John also made the point that there's just sort of this vested interest in empire and reluctance to concede that this has been a failed mission, failed operation. I mean, look, after 12 years, Afghanistan is very, very violent. The president is hardly even the mayor of the capital, the real mayor of the capital. He's corrupt. He's authoritarian. If the U.S. is planning to stay so long, it's a confession of failure, because if the U.S. pulls out, the government will likely fall. I mean, and Al-Qaeda, which was supposedly the reason the U.S. really went in, has simply spawned affiliates which are now all over the place, including Africa and Syria and Iraq and the Arabian Peninsula. So by any standard, this 12-year war has been a dismal failure. The U.S. has lost. And it's as if Obama's saying, well, look, give us at least 10 more years and beyond to get it right. And I promise you we'll get it right. That's what it sounds like this agreement's all about. They can't just confess, look, this is a mess. We never should have gotten into it. We've lost. We can't make it better. We're getting out. So I don't think we can discount that as a motive for this, along with the other thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You point out in your article, too, that, well, they spread Al-Qaeda all over the place. You know, that's the thing about it. Their stated goals, well, we got to stop Al-Qaeda. Well, you already spread them all over the world and made millions of people at least agree with them in theory, if not on tactics, by proving them, quote unquote, right. Oh, you want empire, huh? We'll show you evil empire. I don't know. I mean, they say that they're there to keep the Taliban out, but they've, like you're saying, the fact that they're saying they got to stay is an admission of the fact that everybody knows that they haven't defeated the Taliban at all. In fact, I asked Ann Jones on the show whether she thought if the Americans did leave, theoretically, would the Taliban just come marching back into Kabul? And she said, look, the Taliban are in Kabul now. They're a big part of the Karzai government already. And the U.S. military might be standing around all over the place. They might be doing night raids or whatever. But they don't control the politics of Afghanistan. Nobody does it. The whole thing is a total nightmare. It's a coalition of warlords for now. But, anyway, it just seems like they don't have any stated goals left to even claim to live up to, right? They've backed off of all their stated goals, and now they just have, well, I don't know, don't want to go yet. Security, something. Drugs, maybe.
Right. Well, drugs, too. Just the prestige and just the vested interest. They're just not wanting to give it up. I mean, they have bases. They have they have outposts, and the military industrial complex, may be reluctant to give it up. I think there can be a lot of reasons. I wouldn't point to just one single reason. But Yeah, and of course, the complication with Al-Qaeda is, you know, the U.S. is against Al-Qaeda depending on where it's standing, right? So if it's in Afghanistan, the U.S. government's against it. If it's in Iraq, the U.S. government's against it. But if they cross over into Syria, suddenly the U.S. is on the same side.
Right.
You need a scorecard to keep the players straight.
I know, man. I'm reading about the war in Syria where they go, hey, look, Afghan Mujahideen helping the Al-Qaeda in Syria. Oh, man, really? You got Afghans. You know what? I'm sick and tired of fighting the Americans. I'm going to fight for them. It's easier. Let's go to Syria. you wouldn't want a night raid in your house, right?
From the standpoint of, you know, American common sense, it doesn't make any sense. If you begin to look at various interests behind it, then it starts to make sense. But certainly it's not in the interest of the American people in general. They get nothing out of this. It's costing them a lot. People are still getting hurt. Americans are getting hurt too. And it's insane.
Well, I know at some point there's probably reasons that we could guess at but can't even see from here, right, where – you know, some deputy assistant secretary of something is related to a guy who's helping run the opium black market out of there or whatever. So they're doing everything they can to keep us there in ways that we can't even see, right? But they just have things set up the way they want. The institutional interests that have been built up under the occupation this whole time, probably especially right, including, you know, opiate distribution networks and that kind of stuff. All of those guys have their own levers that they can push and things that they can do. And you and I can look at the outside and criticize the whole policy, try to take it on its face and criticize that. And we can speculate about, you know, things going on in secret. But I think we could bet that there are probably a lot of secret motives for even staying. Things that maybe aren't even government policies at all, but are just policies of certain people in government, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, this is sort of the Coburn analysis. So we can go to higher profile people than the kind of people you're talking about. Maybe Obama and Curry and Samantha Power and Susan Rice don't want a withdrawal and what will follow on their watch. So they're pushing it beyond 2016 way past 2017. And that way, when things fall apart in 2024, 25, or whatever, they're long gone. They've written their memoirs. They're raking in their speaker fees. But no one's going to talk about them at that point.
Right. And after that's all, if they stay for the rest of Obama's years, it's not like the American people are going to notice, short of some catastrophe breaking out over there. So a sure. DM Ben Fu type mask or something. So why not? Crap, now we're out of time. Thanks, Sheldon.
My pleasure. Anytime.
That's Sheldon Richmond, everybody. FFF.org. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. As you may already be aware, Jacob Hornberger, Sheldon Richmond, and James Bovard are awesome. They're also in every issue of The Future of Freedom, and they're joined by others of the best of the libertarian movement. People like Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Lawrence Vance, Joe Stromberg, and many more. Even me. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom, edited by Sheldon Richmond at fff.org/subscribe. And tell me you heard it here. Hey, all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at libertystickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016, FDR, no longer the worst president in American history, the National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952, and USA. Sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at libertystickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at thebumpersticker.com. Libertystickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, you guys. Welcome back to the God Dang Show here, man. I'm Scott. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. I'm on Liberty Express Radio. LibertyExpressRadio.com, 3 to 5 Eastern Time weekdays here. Full interview archives at ScottHorton.org. Also, follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. And, yeah, man. So, I got to get back to Iran's nuclear program and the deal and all that, but not yet. There are a couple other things I wanted to talk about first, and I kind of wasted the whole first hour just
talking about how much I hate Benjamin Netanyahu, which might have been entertaining to people who also hate Benjamin Netanyahu, but probably wasn't very informative and wasn't very convincing for anyone who doesn't already agree with me. It seems like it'd be a lot easier to just state some basic facts, and then you'd all just decide to hate him your damn selves anyway, because such a terrible person. Anyway, I want to talk about the drug war for a second here. Hip-hop conservative congressman to be arraigned on cocaine charge is the headline at the at McClatchy, D.C., McClatchy Newspapers, McClatchyDC.com. Well, so what's hip-hop about him? He likes hip-hop? Okay, I guess he's a hip-hop conservative then. Anyway, a freshman Republican congressman from Florida has been arrested on a cocaine charge. And in fact, he bought it from an undercover cop. And he's facing 180 days imprisonment and a fine of $1,000. And he's not even going to get kicked out of the house. They got a quote from the freaking house whip, or no, a spokesman for the speaker, that the alleged crime will be handled by the courts. Beyond that, this is between him, his family, and his constituents. And then, you know, the Democrats have been making hay, and they have a great point, too, about how this very Republican voted to require drug tests for anyone getting food stamps. Remember my rant earlier about how the Republicans are the most horrible people on the planet? How they're worse than the Chinese communists? Boy, did I mean that. The worst people on the face of the earth. Yeah, because anybody who needs help with a little bit of groceries ought to, you know, go ahead and invite the drug warriors and the Child Protective Services on in, huh? Conservatives. Hi, I'm a conservative. I'm here to smash your family because that's what you get for asking for help buying a box of macaroni and cheese. Because I destroyed the economy and you can't afford a box of macaroni and cheese. Now piss here. The worst people on the planet. Worse than the Chinese Communist Politburo that runs that dictatorship over there. The Republicans. They are the enemies of all of mankind. This is just one tiny little example. Oh, and they're the worst hypocrites in the whole world. Who here thinks that conservatism means no cocaine use? No, no, no. Conservatism just means you support locking up poor people and black people and people who use cocaine outside. You support destroying their families. You support locking them in cages like animals. You support putting their children in foster care. You support putting their wives and girlfriends on welfare. Because that's what they get for being black or brown or wanting to do drugs outside. But meanwhile, Republicans are all cokeheads. You know how I know? Because I'm a cab driver. Used to be. It's been actually 10 years or something since I was a cab driver. I used to be a cab driver. And when I was a cab driver, you know who's ever was doing coke in the back of my cab? Judges. And cops. And Republican state house members. And doctors. And lawyers. White guys. Christians. Republicans. The rest of us can't really afford powdered cocaine very much, you know? It's kind of expensive. The Republicans have made it artificially expensive because they don't know anything about economics, not any more than a Marxist does, maybe less. So they create these horrible black markets that drive up the cost of cocaine so that only they can afford it. And then one day after I interview ACLU lady about people doing life in prison without the possibility of parole on pot charges, I got to read about a Republican member of the House of Representatives facing 180 days and who's not even going to get kicked out of the House which the majority of the House can vote to expel any member of the House of Representatives. It's right there in the Constitution. And, of course, the House of Representatives is controlled by the Republicans. They're the majority. You know, the conservatives, the Christians, the family values. Conservatives. They're all a bunch of cokeheads, too. It probably hadn't even occurred to them that they personally destroy the lives of innocent people by the millions with these laws as they are applied to regular people. They don't even know what hypocrites they are. They don't even care for one moment to notice what hypocrites they are. And you know what? I don't have anything against cocaine, man. I've never done coke in my life. That's the God honest truth. You know me. I'm not a liar. I've never done coke. Never even smoked a little sprinkled on a joint. Although I could honestly say I've been in the room when that happened before, many years ago, and not on my property. And I've known people who have actually really wrecked themselves all the way hit bottom on cocaine addiction. So I'm here to tell you that it can be a real problem for people. I've seen that firsthand. Friends of mine. It ain't as bad as heroin or something, but it can be pretty bad. But the war on drugs, especially in the face of Republican congressmen getting $50 in time served, for buying, not just having some in their pocket, but buying drugs from an undercover cop. Man, it's gotta end. And even if you're one of these people, even if you're like a hardcore drug rehabilitation person, and you have such a thing against cocaine that you just can't conceive of a possibility other than keeping it illegal and trying to wage this ridiculous war against it, you've got to see that, just look at the charts. It's not working. Passing a law against it is like closing your eyes tight and wishing it away. All you're doing, you're helping get innocent people killed. That's what you're doing. You're destroying people's lives. You're not helping anyone by supporting the war on drugs. And the solution is so obvious. Just hands off. Let the market work it out. You know how many recovering cocaine addicts there are in this country? And again, you got to be kind of rich to afford cocaine in the first place for the most part. So these are people with resources. There are plenty of capitalists in the rehab business, and there are plenty of non-profit ones too. And there are plenty of people with real reasons to really want to help someone who has a real cocaine problem, who wants help with it, to get help with it. But the argument comes down to nothing. The argument comes down to, hey, listen, people with drug problems treat people really badly and they ruin their own lives and whatever. Yeah, so. Stealing TVs is already illegal. Mugging people is already illegal. And creating a black market and driving up the price of the consumer goods you're trying to ban is no way to prevent crime. Especially against, you know, innocent TV owners and mugging victims. Never mind all the crime and all the desperation, all the grief and all the violence that comes with the black market itself. You know, again, yesterday's conversation with Jennifer Hudson from the ACLU about people doing life in prison without the possibility of parole. Over a little bit of coke. One of the stories in there is one guy hooked up another guy with a third guy to sell him $10 worth of pot. Nope, that's it. Three strikes and you're out, pal. The rest of your life locked in a cage like an animal. And presumably, some of the other people in there are actual criminals. So you got regular people who don't belong there, locked up with people who we all kind of are glad are locked up somewhere. And what if that happened to you? In fact, what if it was one of these cops under drug war incentives who just pretended that he found a little bit of drugs in your car? What would you do about it? You'd do a mandatory minimum is what you would do about it. He would perjure himself and you would go to prison. And, you know, I don't know, man. If good people having their lives destroyed day in and day out for generations, decent people, their lives torn apart, the lives of the people who care about them, who depend on them, torn apart over the stupid drug war. If that doesn't impress you, how about a $50 in time served, like night court slap on the wrist for a rich, white, Republican congressman who gets to do all the cocaine he wants? Does that seem fair to you at all? Hasn't your line been crossed at some point here? Whoa, but drugs are bad. Yeah, you're real smart. Drugs are bad. Drug wars are destroying our entire society. So screw you. You know what I think? I think that everyone who supports the drug war should get their door kicked in at 4 o'clock in the morning by the SWAT team, who should tie them to the floor and overdose them all on drugs. And then we'll be done. The SWAT teams can disband and we can have a free society. No more conservative cokeheads writing drug laws for use in imprisoning the innocent. And by the way, speaking of why you just about have to be a devil worshiper to support the war on drugs. And, you know, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, I think probably a devil worshiper would say, go ahead and get high, man. It's up to you, right? Maybe you'd have to be a Christian to think that little, tiny, helpless children suffering from epilepsy should have to continue to do so, rather than be treated with a derivative of marijuana by their doctor. Ask yourself, do I think that a tiny helpless child should have to suffer from severe epileptic seizures because I'm so terrified that the wrong message might be sent to someone's kid that marijuana is okay? If this tiny little helpless child can be treated with it for their epilepsy, then you might be a conservative Christian. Otherwise, I don't know how you'd explain yourself. And the Christian thing, I don't know how you explain yourself either, other than, please forgive me for trespassing on people all day. I'm an American conservative Christian, and all I do is trespass. I say that little kid should keep having epileptic fits until it kills her. Ah! But that's why I go to church every Sunday morning. Oh God, please forgive me, Jesus, because I spend all week trespassing on the helpless and the innocent. Please forgive me for trespassing. I'm such a trespasser. I'd have moved to Israel and steal some of the West Bank. I'm a conservative American Christian, and I can't stand the idea that a little child could be treated with a derivative of the pot plant for their epilepsy. It's not my kid. In fact, it's probably, I imagine, the kid of someone who doesn't believe in the same Jesus as me, or else why would they try to treat them with THC? So the little kid's gonna burn in hell forever anyway, so good. Right, conservatives? Isn't that what it means to be a conservative? You just live to deny medicine to helpless children so that you have something to beg forgiveness for on Sunday? Well, look, I would like to express my strong belief that cannabinoid-based oils should soon be available as soon as possible to Utah children with severe epilepsy. The substance is not psychoactive or hallucinogenic. It contains less THC than do other materials that can be legally purchased in Utah. and it has absolutely no abuse potential, declared Francis Filot, chief of the university's Division of Pediatric Neurology. To which all the conservatives in America chanted in unison, "Burn, children, die, we hate you. We prefer you have terrible epileptic fits. The more it hurts you, the more we have to beg forgiveness for on Sunday." As blood dripped from their fangs. And also, here's one that was very interesting in the Chronicle of Higher Education called The American Police State. It's at chronicle.com. You can find the link on my Facebook page today. The American Police State. A sociologist interrogates the criminal justice system and tries to stay out of the spotlight. And it's about this woman whose name is... I got a page down to find the lady's name because they don't say it yet. Alice Goffman. Okay, and she's the daughter of a very famous sociologist. And here what she did was she hung around with the poor and the black in the ghetto and wrote about them. Nice little white girl. Went and spent some time writing about how the other half lived. And man, is this something else. And the lesson here for those of you Americans, you know, the conservatives who think that poor blacks might as well be Arabs, for as much as their human lives count to you at all, that your drug war is destroying their society. It's all counterproductive compared to your stated goals. And this also goes for black conservatives from the ghetto who call for the drug war. It's mostly black ministers who say, yeah, we need to stiffen the penalties for crack. Really? Well, I guess that's what it means to be a conservative, is to be an idiot. And so what's happened is, as she writes, the more they wage the war on drugs, the more every other institution in society is caught up in the war on drugs. And the more every other institution in society is caught up in the war on drugs, the more those who are poor and black and caught up in the war on drugs will stay away from any so-called legit institution and interact with society in any way. They're just pushed further and further and further to the margin. You used to be able to have a part-time legit job and sell drugs part-time too, just to try to get by. But then you learn the lesson that you can't go to your part-time job because the cops will pick you up there. Then you learn that you can't go to the hospital if someone commits a horrible, violent crime against you. Because if you go to the hospital, the cops will be there, and the cops run the name of every young black person in the hospital and see if they can find an excuse to take them off to prison, violate you for your probation. Oh, looked at me funny. You're violated. Bye. And then there's 100 other examples in here about how they've taken the black market and they've taken the black populations, the poor black populations of the ghettos of the major American cities, and they've just ghettoized them even more. They've marginalized them even further. They've given them less and less and less opportunities to find anything else to do but to try to sell drugs for a tiny bit of short-term profit and pleasure before you end up going off to prison anyway. And if you think the poor and the black ghetto dwellers in the worst American cities, the biggest, toughest American cities, already had it bad, oh boy, just wait until Ronald Reagan and George Bush and Bill Clinton and George Bush and Barack Obama come to save them. As she says here, only in the labor camps of the former USSR under Joseph Stalin could you find in history any prison system that approached these levels of confinement. There is no other comparison in the world than Soviet communism. The gulag under Stalin, who was, in case you went to an American communist government school, you might not know, the worst of them. By a lot. A whole new social fabric, she writes. One woven in suspicion, distrust, and the paranoiac practices of secrecy, evasion, and unpredictability. It has turned ghettos into communities of suspects and fugitives. And of course, it was already like that. But the war on drugs, rather than saving the poor and the brown from their terrible addictions, well, and they're terrible because they do drugs outside, sometimes out on the commons, and that makes it, you know, an eyesore for white people to have to deal with. So that's the problem in the first place. But anyway, so solving that with the drug war has done anything but. It's not a war on drugs. It's a war on drug users and a war on drug businessmen and a war on innocents who get caught up in it. And it's madness. And if you support it, you are a bad person. If you have ever supported it, you need to find whatever deity you beg to and beg for forgiveness to them for the crimes that you've helped perpetrate on the people of your own community. What is the matter with you? You know, I think I told you this one on the show once. Years ago now, well, geez, years ago now, it had been, well, the years part was meant to signify how long it had been since I knew the guy. Years since I talked to this guy. Me and him, we were best friends in elementary school. And sort of kind of friends through like 7th grade, maybe a little 8th grade. But high school, didn't know him. Hadn't known him since junior high. Best friends before that for geographical reasons, as Bart Simpson would say. But then I talked to this guy, well, probably 10 years ago now, but might as well be yesterday as far as it goes. How you been? What have you been doing? How are you? Well, he'd been to school, and he'd traveled around the world a little bit, and he had had a job raising money for the Democrats, as he put it, and by the time I talked to him, he was a cop in Washington, D.C., chasing crackheads around all day, as he put it, or all night, as he put it. And this is a smart kid. I mean, not as smart as me, but he was pretty damn smart when we were kids. In fact, I learned about the Fourth Amendment from his dad. Taught us all about the Fourth Amendment and how it was a big deal and a real problem that the Secret Service can come in your house without a warrant if they claim it's an emergency. I don't know what anecdote or, you know, what where that came from exactly. But anyway, that was how I learned about the Fourth Amendment for the first time. Anyway, so as soon as I established that he's going to go ahead and, you know, he's had his turn, now it's time for me to talk for a second, I says to him, I says, it's all your fault. I can't believe you. You're the cause of all grief and pain associated with drug use in Washington, D.C. How could you? And he had no idea what I was talking about. D.C. cop now. No idea what I was talking about. I said, hey, man, they're only running because you're chasing them. It's only illegal because you're enforcing its illegality. Otherwise, there's no crime. Otherwise, cocaine is cheap enough that even poor people can do it without having to rock it up. Which is apparently a lot worse for you. You've done it. And he, I mean, he talked about what, you know, a horror show it was in some parts of Washington, D.C. And he kind of understood the point about black markets and driving up prices, and all you ever do is give new people incentive to join the market. That's it. You don't ever end the market. You can't at all. It's impossible. And I just gave him, you know, the 2-minute economics version of the drug war, and he knew I was right, and he didn't have nothing to say, but I guarantee he's still a cop in D.C. now, or enforcing the drug war some other place. After all, he sees bad people involved in the drug trade all the time. They're really bad guys, some of these guys. So that's proof positive that the egg came before the chicken, not the other way around. And, you know, people search for and can find all the confirmation bias they need, right? Everybody in America knows that alcohol prohibition was not just didn't work, but was completely stupid. How did you think it was ever going to work? Demand for alcohol didn't go away. Just legal channels of distribution went away. So guess what happened? Illegal channels of distribution and all the crime that came with that. Oh, and also people gave up beer and started drinking hard liquor. And instead of beating their wives, they started beating them to death. Oh, good job, bootleggers and Baptists getting alcohol banned. And then, you know, when the Depression came, they finally realized they wanted the tax revenue so that they could do bigger and better things, and they would sacrifice their war on alcohol. But boy, isn't that unique in American history that they would ever admit that they were wrong? Admit that what they had done was destroy the society that they were trying to save, like a Vietnamese hut. This madness. I just don't know how this keeps going on. I don't know how any liberal or conservative of... I don't know how any adult human being of any persuasion whatsoever could think, other than the cops themselves, who are all just a bunch of welfare whores, them and their unions. But I don't know how anyone else in the world could support the drug war. You'd have to be a damn devil. Anyway, see you tomorrow.